You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, police forces on some Wisconsin campuses are offering students who've been caught with drugs the opportunity to become police informants and avoid a felony. We'll hear from the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism.
First, the effects of video games and technology on kids have been in the news a lot lately. A new study from UCLA found that kids who spent too much time on devices had trouble recognizing human emotions. And this weekend, the New York Times ran an article revealing that high-tech wizards like Steve Jobs were pretty hard-nosed when it came to screen time for their kids. Parents today, they're navigating new waters as they balance the latest research on technology and learning with the tech-saturated world we live in.
Joining us now to talk about parenting in the age of technology are Constance Steinkuhler and Kurt Squire. They're co-directors of the Games and Learning Society Center at the Wisconsin Institutes of Discovery at UW-Madison. Constance, welcome to Central Time. Constance, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you for having us.
Great. And Kurt, welcome to you as well.
Thanks for having us.
Well, I want to start out a little bit with this research from UCLA. This came out last week, saying essentially that kids who spend too much time on devices are less capable of recognizing emotions. Constance, what do you make of that finding?
Well, it's certainly an interesting finding, and it's coming out of a great lab. I mean, I think that right now, you know, we really know so little about children and devices. I mean, some of the work that we do is actually looking at how can games and other kinds of digital media be used to do exactly the opposite, to actually improve people's ability to recognize and engage with other people's emotional states? So the biggest question I have is simply, you know, rather than talking about screen time, we need to sort of dig into what are kids actually doing on media. Not all forms of media consumption are the same, and most parents know that.
So when we talk about different kinds of media consumption, can you put them on the spectrum for us in terms of ones that might be less worrisome and ones that might raise more of a flag?
Sure. I know, you know, and again, I think to start off, most parents know their children and know when they start becoming uncomfortable with a certain kind of media pattern. In our own house, we have a basic rule of thumb that when media gets in the way of engaging in other activities that our kids are interested in, so, for example, if our kids are giving up, you know, dinner with their family or, you know, playing soccer with their friends outdoors and to the detriment of those other habits, if they're engaged in media, then we sort of start to curtail the media down. And that's a pretty across-the-board rule of thumb when it comes to scholars that look at issues like addiction.
And Kurt, I want to talk to you next. You both have devoted your professional lives to learning about the potential of video games and developing that. But there is a seesawing of public opinion about devices like video games and iPads and how they might affect kids. Kurt, why is there so much anxiety right now about digital media, video games, technology, and parenting?
Sure. Well, typically any kind of new or emerging technology brings with it that same kind of fear and concerns, and then also hopes and dreams. So everything from, you know, the printing press to the telephone, the telegraph, has a very similar set of concerns around it. So it's something that is common, you know, the, video games, the internet, social media, and so on. They oftentimes are kind of a lightning rod for our social anxieties, but then also our hopes for how we might create a better future.
And ultimately, parents, you know, we can't really opt out of this. There's media everywhere. There's technology everywhere. Kurt, can you recommend any starting blocks for parents who want to start considering these questions about what's good for their kids and how much is too much?
Well, I think it's really good to, I personally advocate that knowing your child, and every child is different, and trying to like Constance said, observe what they're doing and see when it's looking like it's something that's productive for them and healthy for their lives, and maybe when it's too much. One of the things that any parent can do that is almost always a good thing is try to figure out exactly what it is your children are interested in and what kinds of media they're consuming, and then having conversations with them about it, like what they like, what they don't like, what you can, you know, do dramatic play around it, depending on the age. There's all kinds of things you can do. But really getting into a conversation about the media they're consuming or interacting with is always a good thing.
And Constance, there's been, in the past decade or so, a lot of negative attention toward video games, in particular when it comes to school shootings. Is that something you think that we've sort of reached a cultural resting point on, that we're not as worried about that connection? Or is it still something that's an active worry in our culture?
Well, I certainly think that parents and teachers are still concerned about the content and the messages that are in media. But I do think that we've kind of evolved a bit in our conversation around video games in particular. I think the fact that now games are so ubiquitous, they're across mobile devices, and your mothers and grandmothers and grandfathers, everyone kind of plays. So now that we have a more, I suppose, experienced consumer base, I think that, you know, sort of huge generalizations about games no longer fly. You know, in the past, when there was an episode of teen violence or a school violence, you know, very quickly it would be followed up with studies, you know, arguing, or reporters arguing, I should say, that that it's linked to video game violence, and that ultimately, you know, the perpetrators were video game players. But it's really important to remember that for most youth, it's all, most youth are video game players. 99% of boys, 94% of girls,
wow.
So 97% of youth across the board. Now, again, that doesn't mean to advocate, you know, even for games. And I would say in our house, we regulate television and movie time far more than we regulate game time, because games are the one medium that can really turn screen time into activity time. You know, it's not a consumptive media. It's a media that doesn't do anything until you make a decision or move or act.
I guess I shouldn't be, but I'm a little surprised at those numbers. 99% of boys, 94% of girls. So I guess, you know, if you try to implicate video games in violence, it's like saying, you know, kids who breathe oxygen are more violent because everyone's
exactly.
doing it.
Exactly.
I want to ask you guys about a recent New York Times article came out this weekend saying that Steve Jobs and other tech leaders actually pretty stringent when it comes to allowing technology in their own homes. You might sort of think the opposite, but the takeaway there for parents reading that is kind of, you know, if Steve Jobs, you know, hardly allows any screen time in his home, what does he know that the rest of us don't know? What do you think tech leaders, according to this art, why do you think they come down on the side of caution, Kurt?
Well, I don't know. It's an interesting question. I did get a chance to read it, and I think there are at least a couple of themes that jump out at you, that they, you know, made a really strong point of having dinner together as a family, which, and given the other things I've heard about Steve Jobs' life and work habits, I'm impressed that he did actually make the time, but because not all families can. I don't know how well he could do with that, but it's a kind of thing that if you can find a way to do it, I know it's difficult for many families, but that's a very valuable thing, and there has been a lot of research around that, as well as being a very kind of important form of social interaction. But yeah, I think that it hopefully it at least communicates, if there's a sense that we, you know, have to get all of the latest devices or our kids will inherently fall behind, that clearly these tech leaders weren't saying that that's true. At the same time, I would be surprised if they didn't have access to things like computers for learning things like programming or design. And so I do want to, you know, I would also want to caution just to make sure that people don't, you know, think that they weren't living out, you know, entirely in the woods or something without any devices, because it does seem that most kind of tech leaders do support their kids' interests and use technology to develop those passions and to develop skills so that they can kind of learn on their own and learn to express themselves through a variety of means supported by technology.
Right, and there was someone quoted in the article, and I can't remember exactly who at the moment, but saying that you can actually spend time creating artistically online during screen time, and that's a legitimate, you know, kind of artistic creation time for kids. Do you think that's true, Constance?
Absolutely. And I think one really important theme in the articles and the discussion is really that you have parents that are involved in making strategic choices around media. And, you know, in most of our lifestyles right now, we are absolutely awash with media as adults. So we're setting a model where, you know, computers and digital mobile devices are just integrated into every aspect of our life, both at home and at work. And I think one, I would say the theme that you see is that these are hands-on parents who actually have ideas about what's good and not good for their kids. You know, right now, the contemporary media landscape does not make those choices easy. I'll give you an example. My 7-year-old is extremely interested in football. He loves Madden. And for him, screen time is really caught up in this kind of ecosystem where he is watching live games with his father. He's playing football for fun with his little friends. He's playing Madden, and he uses Madden as a way to model through various real-time players. So it's really sophisticated kinds of work. But, you know, as a mom, I'm terrible. I'm terrible at Madden. It's not very fun for me, and it's hard. If I weren't actually a game scholar, it would be very difficult for me to understand, is this productive media consumption? Is this creative and playful and thought-provoking and problem-solving, or is this button-mashing? And that's hard to do when you're dealing with media that are, you know, 50-hour games. But I think that the rule of thumb is probably engage with what your children are doing, and that we're not off the hook as parents to actually make some decisions around what is appropriate and what is not appropriate media use.
We're talking right now with Constance Steinkuhler and Kurt Squire. They're co-directors of the Games and Learning Society Center at the Wisconsin Institutes of Discovery at UW-Madison.
And we want to hear from you. Do you worry about parenting in the age of technology? What kinds of limits do you give your kids when it comes to screen time and video games? Do you see benefits to playing some of these games? And are you hopeful about some of the new research related to games and learning? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking about technology and parenting right now with Constance Steinkuhler and Kurt Squire. They're co-directors of the Games and Learning Society Center at the Wisconsin Institutes of Discovery at UW-Madison.
And we want to hear from you. What kind of limits do you give your kids when it comes to screen time and video games? Do you see video games in particular as a negative, a positive, or maybe a little of both in kids' lives? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And I want to ask about, you know, the work that you both do pretty much every day. You're working on new applications for games and learning. Kurt, what are you excited about right now?
That's a good question. Well, one thing I'm excited about is one of our games called Econauts was just selected to be a part of the CoLab incubator out in San Francisco. So we just flew a graduate student out there and there's an article in Forbes on it, actually, who's going to be working to develop this, hopefully for a broader marketplace for homes and schools and after schools. We worked with Robert Bohannon over at UW's Limnology Department on it extensively. So it's got really good science behind it, and it's trying to make kind of the idea of how do we manage our environmental resources most effectively, kind of make it into an interesting game.
And so there's some fish in it, I take it. So it's called Ecolabs?
Econauts, yeah.
Econauts.
So there's fish and there's lumber. So you have to manage the very real demands of how do we use our, you know, lumber resources and mining and so on, but then also with kind of understand the various environmental effects of what gets done where and in what ways. And so one thing I like about it is that it tries to get beyond some of the kind of either-or debates or the kind of traditional political lines and says, well, look, we know we have to make decisions about how to use our resources kind of responsibly, and then it lets kids do this in a real-time strategy game that's a lot of fun.
Great. And let's go to the phones right now. Selena is joining us from Burlington. Hi, Selena.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I just had... just something that really worried me. Recently, my two grandsons, 12 and 13, who I don't get to see very often, I made arrangements for them to come to my house and spend the night and then go to a water park and spend the night at that water park. And they had their two things that they have, like, constantly. One, I think, was an iPod, and then the other one had a game, one of the game things that they were, you know, constantly playing, constantly on. They had these earbuds in their ears constantly, you know, and... you know, I don't see them often enough that I want to get, like, really, really strict with them since, you know, we were supposed to be having a good time. And so they spent, you know, the whole night with these things on, and then they wouldn't turn them off. I couldn't take them away from them. And they were supposed to go to sleep, and at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I went into the bedroom to check to make sure they were asleep, and they still had these things in their ears.
Wow, so they really were going at it with the iPods and other games. And I don't know, do you guys, this isn't exactly your specialty about how to, you know, negotiate the territory with the kids themselves, but Constance, any advice that comes to mind?
Yeah, well, I sympathize. I've been in that situation with teens before, so I know what that pattern looks like. And it's tricky, right? I mean, you certainly, I feel for you in that you don't want to engage in a power struggle around it. But I do think it's okay as adults, with children and with, you know, young teenagers that to simply say, you know, this isn't going to be a media time. I'm much more comfortable and liberal when it's something like, you know, the 25 minutes it takes me to get home from work where I know my child would be really probably sitting idle. I don't mind if he gets at his iPad then. But, you know, when it comes to sitting down to dinner last night, you know, all those devices have to go off, including my own, by the way.
Well, good luck, Selena. I hope you've got some ideas there. We're going to go next to Greg in Wausau. Hi, Greg.
Hi there. Yeah, I just wanted to make a quick comment. I am a 22-year-old, and I've been around video games a lot, and I know sometimes they do have kind of a bad rap with violence, so I did want to say I think it's really good what we see going on with people trying to implement these new type of games where they are actually educational and they do help rather than just being about warfare. And second, I did just want to say, especially about the last caller that I just caught, I think that's really good to have that implemented with your family, to have more connection and keep the eyes up at each other and conversation versus being sucked into an inanimate object like a phone. So I think it's really good with what we've been striving for in recent times.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your call, Greg. Appreciate that. And this is a good time, Constance, to ask you about some of the work that you've done in cooperation with the Center for the Investigation of Healthy Minds. Do you want to tell us about some of that?
Sure. Well, our center, the Games Learning and Society Center, have been collaborating with Richie Davidson and his Center for Investigating Healthy Minds for probably the last year and a half or so. And part of what we're trying to do is to think about how would you actually create engaging experiences on screens that do exactly the opposite of what you're seeing the recent study report, where rather than disengaging people socially, it actually reengages them. You know, there are certain things that digital devices can afford us. And it's probably also worth reminding everyone that, you know, I'm in my 40s, and when I grew up in a small town where after school, you know, we were kind of latchkey kids after a certain point, but we all played in the yard and got to play outside with strangers, with neighbors, you know, until the pole lights came on. And that really is not the context for many youth right now. For many youth, they're time socializing without parents hovering over them is fairly limited. There's most of their pastimes where they're engaging with other kids outside of classrooms happens to be through structured activities like soccer or ballet. So what that means is that, you know, kids are playing online and they're playing through digital media devices and they're coming up with new forms of sort of less regulated, less parent regulated worlds in which they can engage. And you know, I think it's hard to talk about youth culture without also acknowledging the history of where it's at. So part of the work we've been doing is thinking about, well, if kids are gaming on average about an hour and 20 minutes a day or so, what could we be creating in that space that would actually re-engage them in other kinds of activities that we know are going to be really life-enhancing?
And, yeah, that's part of it is getting them into the life-enhancing sorts of games, but I also wonder if part of what you guys are doing in the center is you're trying to get away from the old notion that if it's educational, it's a synonym for boring and getting kids who want to play this kind of video game instead of, you know, thinking, oh, it's educational, it's good for me, I don't want to play it. What do you think, Kurt?
Absolutely. Yeah, so a lot of what we try to do is try to find places where something like, say, new discoveries in science or maybe even, you know, aspects of history are inherently engaging and there's a game kind of to be found in it. So some of the work we did with, say, the systems biologists here at UW was looking at how they are, the kinds of research they're doing on viruses and trying to understand, say, the relationship between the different microbes in the body. It's really fascinating stuff. And then build games about it, because in that case, there really is this sort of game that's been going on between bacteria and viruses and, you know, various parasites and whatnot in the human body, or you know, mammals in general. And say building a game around that, or something around stem cells that we've been doing, to try to just find things that are interesting. And it's a little bit like the role historically that science fiction has played, or historical fiction, in terms of being about real things, letting you play around with some of the ideas.
Kurt, what would you say to sort of encourage parents that it's okay what's happening now? There is an explosion of digital media, an explosion of games, online stuff, and different platforms, but that it's okay, and that, you know, everyone will get through it, you know, at least mostly unscathed.
Well, I think partly, you know, just remembering back to when they were kids or we were kids, and you know, some of the crazy things we did, and, you know, most of us came out okay. And I think that that's always, you know, just a good kind of sobering thing to remember. I think the other thing is it's sometimes useful to look at yourself, too. So I sometimes, you know, laugh because my kids, both at the age of 2, learn to say, "Phone down, Daddy, look at me." Oh, maybe I'm modeling this. And so, you know, just being aware that this is, you know, we are the most powerful role models, and that we do live in a world that's awash with screens. And I think giving them the tools to try to manage that, and that does include, as, you know, Constance was saying, stepping in at times and helping them make decisions or making decisions. But, yeah, I think the vast majority of the research on it shows that it's, you know, in general, things are, you know, like I said, going to be okay, but that it is okay to kind of, you know, step in and follow what you think are the needs of your child.
And I know you guys are both not just in this professionally, you're in this for fun, too. You both love to play games. So in our final moments here, Constance, what are you playing right now?
Oh, my goodness. So I am playing Diablo 3 on hardcore mode with my husband, and it's the way that we stay in and play like we're having a date night after the kids go to bed. It's super fun. It makes me laugh out loud. And I'm also playing a couple casual games on my phone. I'm playing Two Dots, which is, has gotten so devilishly hard that, that I talk to it quite a bit.
Two Dots and Diablo 3. What about you, Kurt?
Well, yes, the aforementioned Diablo 3. But then also Minecraft. My oldest child and I have a Minecraft server. We play with some people from work. And that's a lot of fun, just getting in it and, you know, doing something kind of creative and exploratory together. It's a lot of fun.
Awesome. Well, thank you both for joining us. That was Constance Steinkuhler and Kurt Squire, co-directors of the Games and Learning Society Center at the Wisconsin Institutes of Discovery at UW-Madison.